Hello, this is Noah Villaverde, host of the Blank Green Canvas podcast. You are listening to episode 4, and I'm going to be joined by my friend Jorge Rodriguez. How are you doing, Jorge?
Hi, I'm pretty good. Just chilling today, you know.
Nice. You spent time with your family, I heard.
Yeah. You know, the weekend I didn't work, so I was like, you know what, I'm going to go back to my parents and just visit and watch the soccer game there with my dad. So that's kind of what I did.
Oh, that's cool, man. If by the way, we're actually recording this episode at a new place that Jorge just moved into. It's a nice place. I like it. It's nice, and it's in a newer neighborhood.
Yeah, it's right next to the mall, so...
Which is fitting, so if you wanted to go see a movie at the theater that I work at, we just invite you over, and you can just walk by. Oh, sure, let's go see a movie.
I know, right?
That's how it turned out for Dark Phoenix, which, by the way, if you tuned in, this week we are going to be discussing Dark Phoenix and the X-Men franchise as a whole, past, present, and future, now that Disney has acquired Fox, which also includes the rights to the X-Men as well as the Fantastic Four. So before we talk about Dark Phoenix itself, I think it's right that we just discuss the X-Men franchise, which started back in 2000. Now, it began with the first film, X-Men, directed by Bryan Singer.
That was kind of like the movie, the superhero movie that started it all, kind of.
Yeah, definitely.
Because, I mean, they had the Batman game, the Batman ones, but it wasn't...
Yeah, they had Superman, you know, with Christopher Reeve.
But
those were Batman DC. 89 was pretty big, but, like, I'd say X-Men in 2000 really kickstarted the trend that turned it into a big genre that it is today.
Well, the graphics, I think the graphics and just the overall...
VFX.
The VFX just were so much better by the year 2000 that it made so much more sense to actually, you know, make superhero movies.
Now. Yeah, because with the nature of the VFX back in like the 70s to the 90s, it wasn't fully there yet, so they were definitely focusing more on like the practical effects, which I always appreciate, you know, especially when they still try to find a way to use those today. But with X-Men, you know, with Wolverine, obviously, with his claws, or like other certain powers that they exhibit, like Cyclops and his lasers, telekinetic powers that, Jean or Professor X has to exercise. Definitely, thankfully, they were able to get those effects by then. It was a year after The Matrix came out, which helped also revolutionize special effects at the time.
And, I think it was 2 years after The Matrix.
Well, yeah, 99.
98. The Matrix came out in 98.
I'm pretty sure it was 99. I remember it was 1999.
Somewhere around
that time, late 90s, end of the 20th century, into the 21st century, which is fitting that the first X-Men came out at the beginning of this century, 19 years ago. Did you see that in theaters?
Yeah.
Like, do you remember when it came out? Like, do you have any?
I didn't see it in theaters, but yeah. I saw a lot of promotion before because I remember watching right before the movie came out. They had like this whole thing on Fox where the X-Men. Were on trial. Well, not on trial, but they were trying to make it seem like there was a trial to see if they wanted mutants with regular people and stuff
right.
like that.
Oh yeah, right. With the
and it was kind of like a promotional thing, and it was cool, and I was kind of intrigued by it, but yeah. It was a huge movie, and it came out.
Did you ever watch the original cartoon?
Yeah, the 1992 cartoon?
Around the 90s. It came out in the 90s, definitely.
I think it was 92.
And that was when the X-Men were probably, besides like Batman and Superman, they were probably the most popular superheroes during that era. You know, like the 90s kids, basically, if you grew up that time, which I'm certain you did, that X-Men were it. Whereas nowadays, kids are like obsessed about the Avengers, you know. So I'm pretty sure, obviously, building up to the hype of that first X-Men movie, introducing them there, was something that excited a lot of people who grew up on the comics and also watching the cartoon as well.
So, yeah, I remember it used to be like early in the morning and I just wake up just to watch the cartoon.
Yeah.
I basically bought the bootleg version of all the cartoons when I was deployed. I got it for cheap. So I was like, yeah, I'm taking all of them.
Oh, so you just found a bootleg while you were deployed?
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah. You know, but yeah, that was the first X-Men film, you know, introduced us to Rogue and Wolverine in the opening scenes. The very opening scene though, like we see Magneto, obviously. And like when he was young back in the Holocaust, which we see again in X-Men First Class, which we'll get into a bit later. But I think it was you were right. You can't deny the impact that that film had on the industry and the state of the comic book genre as a whole, which leads up to X2, which I think of the first three is probably my favorite.
That's the one I did see in theaters.
Yeah.
That was the one I see on opening weekend.
Yeah.
I think it was on my cousin's house in Santa Rosa, and, yeah. and they were like, hey, let's go see X2.
I mean, there's... Yeah. That was 2003, and that definitely... A lot of people would agree, like, of those first three, it's probably the best one overall. I always remember the Nightcrawler sequence, you know, which is just fantastic and everything. And, like, I think I saw that when it came out on DVD because I didn't see a lot of those movies
in
theaters yet.
The reason why it was a lot more, it just had a better story because it focused more on Wolverine.
Yeah.
It focused more on the Wolverine.
Who, for better or worse, is probably the strength of a lot of these movies.
Well, the reason was because Hugh Jackman became such a huge star, and at the same time,
people hated the casting originally because, you know, Wolverine in the comics, he's, you know, like 5'6" or whatever.
Nobody really understood a lot of the people that were playing those characters, like the actors, the casting. There were a lot of hate, I remember, but then all of a sudden, people grew up to love them.
Yeah,
I feel like it's the same thing now with you know how they did the whole Batman thing.
Well, every time they announce a new actor for any iconic role, there's always going to be some sort of backlash. I mean, Batman's an obvious example, not just with the Batman character itself, but also with the Joker. You know, every time, like, you know, Heath Ledger got a lot of why him, and then obviously we saw how that turned out. And then also just recently, like, it's a repeat of, like, what happened when Ben Affleck was announced, and then now Robert Pattinson being Batman, but that's a whole other story. But yeah, going back to X2, it definitely explored the story more. It did what a good sequel is supposed to do, expand upon the characters, give us an interesting dynamic, and set the conflict up for something very interesting.
Yeah.
Which leads to X3, The Last Stand, which a lot of people agree really screwed up the franchise quite a bit.
It was I just felt they missed the mark.
Yeah.
I felt like they tried to go away from the comics and just go on to... Or take the story from the comics and go
the Dark Phoenix, which we're going to get into itself.
Yeah, like the Dark Phoenix saga, which
is a saga which we'll get into when we talk about the actual movie. My issue with that thing is that the Dark Phoenix saga shouldn't be confined to one film. It should be at least two, ideally a trilogy, you know, which would fit perfectly for that story given the nature of, you know, the Chris Claremont story and everything else. Because it's probably the most iconic X-Men story given
I remember about the whole Dark Phoenix or the Phoenix saga was the in the cartoons.
Yeah.
Because they did such a good arc on there of the whole, like, how she first got into this the being the Dark Phoenix or the Phoenix
and how it teased that the powers that she had.
Yeah, all that stuff. So that's what I most remember and what I kind of wanted to see in The Last Stand.
Right. Yeah.
But it just
The Last Stand, it wanted to rush through a lot of iconic moments in the comics in its own way. I mean, it had a lot of production issues as well. Brett Ratner came in to direct it instead of Bryan Singer, which, by the way, when we bring up these two directors who have been in headlines in the last 2 years for shady stuff, to say the least, we're not endorsing them as people or their actions, obviously. We're just talking about the films they created. Just wanted to let you guys know that. But when Brett Ratner came in, I don't think he was a good fit in general for what they were trying to go for with the story. I think X3 had its moments, actually. There were some cool sequences.
Yeah, the Juggernaut came out on that one, right?
Yeah, and
the first iteration of it.
Kitty Pryde came in.
Kitty Pryde.
You know, wasn't this where Kelsey Grammer came in as Beast for the first time?
Came out...
Where was
He was definitely on there, but I'm not sure if he came out on 2 or not.
It's been a long time since I've seen those two. I actually
He was definitely on there.
Yeah, I rewatched the first X-Men. I always let Kelsey Grammer as Beast. And I'd say overall, like, the acting has always been solid in those first three movies. Yeah. You know, like Famke Jensen, who I always had a crush on, like, as Jean, when she's Dark Phoenix, I always found her interesting. You know, obviously, Hugh Jackman is always great. The issue people always had was when they killed off, I mean, in quotes, killed off Charles Xavier and Scott, you know, Cyclops. People always found that funny. That was another thing I always found underwhelming. They always underused Scott. You know, they always, like, because they've always set him up in the comics and the cartoon. He was basically, like, the leader of the team. And I always found that underwhelming that they never used him to his fullest potential. that he should have, or give him a more prominent role. Because really, once Hugh Jackman came into the spot, and to be fair, Hugh Jackman, no offense to James Marsden, Hugh Jackman's just a better actor.
I think that's what it was, that James Marsden didn't have that...
Not that he was bad, he was good.
Light, you know, the overall, like, star power that Hugh Jackman had, you know?
Yeah, which is interesting, you know? Like, it's not a diss on James Marsden. I think he was a solid Scott. It's just that I feel like the material they gave him wasn't enough for him to really come into his own and showcase, hey, I should be, like, the leader of this whole thing. You know, obviously Professor X, but, you know. So X-Men 1, 2, and 3, that was, like, the era of the original mutants. And then we go on to a weird period of time where the X-Men franchise kind of delved into different paths, like with X-Men Origins Wolverine, which is widely believed and agreed upon by fans and critics alike to be probably the least of all of these mutant films.
I felt like they had a good concept of it, you know, the Wolverine one.
Yeah.
It just... Not the Wolverine, but X-Men Origins, the Wolverine.
Right.
It could have been so much better, but I felt like there was so many things around it, too, that, like, you know, how it got leaked before. And,
oh, yeah, it did get leaked. I remember going on the internet saying, oh, X-Men Origins Wolverine leaked.
Because, yeah. Honestly, the first time I watched it as a leaked.
Wow, so, really? You saw the leak?
Yeah, and it was like, okay, so this doesn't have, like, any of the effects finished.
Yeah.
So... That kind of messed it up too, and I felt like the story was kind of lacking, but it had something there.
Okay, like my issue with that movie was I felt it was lazy, very rushed. Gavin Hood directed it. It was written by David Benioff, Game of Thrones fame, and Skip Woods, which is a funny connection because last time you were on here with me, we were talking about Game of Thrones. Yeah, and another Game connection about this podcast is that both Game of Thrones has Sophie Turner, and Dark Phoenix is... also features Sophie Turner, so that's funny. But Wolverine Origins, it's notorious for the way it kind of screwed up with the canon, the treatment of Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool, which wasn't Deadpool, really. Like, he kind of teased it a bit, like the personality.
It was kind of like Deadpool, but...
Like when he wasn't, without the suit, because we don't see him in the suit, and then they show us some sort of neutered version of Deadpool. And something that's not Deadpool at all, where he has his mouth sewed up, which everybody's made jokes about, even the Deadpool movies themselves has made jokes about. But, like, X-Men Origins Wolverine lost a lot of fans lost faith in the franchise after that happened because of what it brought and how it treated a lot of those characters. The story itself was weird. It's weird. Remember Will.i.am from the Black Eyed Peas was in that movie?
He was.
It's so funny to think about. It came out 2009. I remember I was so excited for it because I saw those trailers. I was like, oh, great. This is going to be a cool take on Wolverine. We're going to see how he began. You know, I was so hyped. It was a year after The Dark Knight came out. So the superhero and Iron Man. So the superhero genre just reached a new height.
Wasn't this the golden time?
The beginning of the golden time, really. Where it's like Iron Man and The Dark Knight really set the standard for like the current decade that we just had of the comic book genre. And Wolverine... I thought was going to continue that, but really it just kind of dropped the ball majorly. So then after, you know, X-Men Origins Wolverine, a lot of people lost faith in the franchise. But 2 years later, X-Men First Class came out. And originally, I wasn't that excited because I thought, oh, another prequel? What are they going to do with this? I'm kind of skeptical about what's going on.
I was more skeptical about the choice of, like, people. I thought...
The actors?
Like, yeah, because they were going to change so many things, so many actors.
They were relatively unknown at the time, too. Like, they were character actors that were getting up there that people who followed movies, not just big movies, but small movies, knew. But people were like, that's interesting. Michael Fassbender, James McAvoy, Jennifer Lawrence before...
I think Jennifer Lawrence was the biggest name.
Yeah, well, this is before The Hunger Games. Like, this was really her first big movie.
I think that was like, right on the time of the
Hunger Games. She was filming Hunger Games at the time, because Hunger Games came out in 2012. This one came out in 2011. Mm-hmm. And she just did Winner's Bone, so she was an Oscar nominee by that time, where she showcased to everybody, hey, look, I'm... a talent that you should be watching. So, and the posters I remember that came out for that movie were historically bad, like terrible Photoshop and everything else, and people just felt burned by Wolverine Origins. So my excitement for a First Class just wasn't there originally, but then I saw it the opening weekend it came out, and I loved it. I love First Class.
First Class was actually very well written, had good acting.
Directed by Matthew Vaughn, who directed Kick-Ass. He did the first two Kingsman movies. Among other films, Layer Cake.
It had a good combination of action and, you know, and just regular dialogue sequences.
Yeah, definitely.
That's what kind of
It was a solid script. It was a solid story, and it had a great character dynamic between the two leads, which are, you know, Charles Xavier and Magneto, you know, Eric Lenscher. Seeing their origins when they were younger back, it was the 60s, right? It was the 60s when that took place, because that was the Cuban Missile Crisis. Yeah, the Cuban
Missile Crisis was, like, right in the 60s.
Yeah. And what really made that movie was those two. James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender, to a lot of people, they would say they are now the definitive actors, even more so in a lot of ways than, you know, Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen, who, I mean, I love them.
Well,
I mean, that's not how some people feel.
When you see them, you still feel like, oh, that's Charles Xavier and Gandalf. But yeah, I feel like those two are definitely, those characters are.
They made it their own in a way that they weren't doing an imitation of those original actors or the younger versions of them. They made it their own. They gave a lot of, like, backstory to them that just got you immediately invested in where they were from, their relationship with each other, what happens when, you know, Magneto finally gives in to his own temptations with his anger and resentment towards humanity. You really buy it, especially in that final battle where, you know, the rest of some of those mutants team up with Magneto, or when, you know, Raven, played by Jennifer Lawrence, you know, as Mystique, she joins him. Mutant and proud and all those things. I mean, I've always had an issue. I love Jennifer Lawrence. I think she's a great actress. I always felt like her portrayal, especially in the later films that she's in, of Raven / Mystique, always fell short, or she just wasn't giving her all, because I felt like those first two movies, she was definitely into it more. But the later two movies, I always felt like she was sleepwalking, which we'll get into more. But,
I feel like
I always prefer Rebecca Romijn.
She already had the contract of doing all the movies, so she was. And this already was into
as
it.
She was getting big.
Yeah, she got big, she was over it. She was like,
my thing is that whenever she had to film a new film, she was like, okay, I'll get the paycheck. She goes on set. She's excited to reunite with, like, James McAvoy, Michael Fassbender in the cast. She probably loves that cast. Yeah. Her ex-boyfriend's in that cast, too, which is funny, because she used to date Nicholas Holt.
Oh, okay.
You know, so that's kind of funny. But, like, I always felt like she was never really fully into it, at least early, like, well, she was a little more into it early on, but especially as she became basically the biggest actress in the world at that time, you know, she just got over it and just phoned it in, literally.
Yeah.
But, overall, though, I really loved First Class because of what introduced with, like, that new era of the X-Men, that early era. I didn't know a prequel would have been one of the better, if not my favorite, X-Men film.
Yeah, I feel like that a prequel just restarted the whole, oh, damn.
Yeah
I really liked
it. And after that,
I really liked
the
X-Men.
And after that,
that's why I like the X-Men, so I'm going to go ahead and do it.
And then after that, we got, and of course, the greatest cameo ever by Hugh Jackman, when Charles and Eric, they go into the bar and they try to recruit him.
Yeah, they're trying to.
And he's with the cigar.
Tells them all. Yeah.
That's an iconic
moment. That was pretty good.
That's a perfect moment using that one F-bomb you could use in an R-rated film and everything. Then we took a break from that. We got another Wolverine film, which I like.
I liked it too. I thought it was more of a fans film than anything else. Like, if you like the films... if you like the comic book, any comic book films, that was a pretty good film.
Yeah.
If you don't like the comic books, you kind of didn't really understand it. You were like, okay, it's an action film. But
yeah, you get that.
So if you like the other...
I think it succeeds most in the first two acts, where it's really not a conventional superhero movie. It's really a character study on Logan himself. You know, I love it was Japan, right?
Yeah, Japan.
The Japanese setting, the cinematography was really well done. I love that bullet train sequence.
That's
really badass. I felt like it kind of faltered a little bit in the third act, where it kind of has to give in to every superhero trope that we see in a third act, unfortunately. But I still found it to be an interesting segue into seeing Wolverine's life at that time. And then we'll get to another certain Wolverine film that I absolutely adore a little later on. But it leads up with a mid-credit sequence leading up to Days of Future Past, which I think is a pretty solid film as well.
Yeah, I think it rearranged the timeline so they could bring in the other...
It was the best of both worlds for both sides
of the thing.
Yeah,
basically it was a really good movie to bring both the old... cast and the new cast together, and even though it was mainly the new cast, the old cast was still there, but it was, you know, I felt like it was something, it was a good film.
Yeah.
It was It was enjoyable.
The Quicksilver sequence.
Yeah.
You know, that's what the one everyone talks about.
Magneto Quicksilver.
Time in a bottle.
Yeah.
You know, and everything. That was just so entertaining. Because a lot of people were so scared about Quicksilver. Because they saw pictures of him, you know, like.
It was that whole, commercial with the
Carl's Jr.
Commercial.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was, everybody was like, oh, but it wasn't even the same actor, I don't think.
I think it was the same actor. Yeah, it was just Evan Peters, yeah.
Yeah, it was just different. I don't know, it looked weird.
And that was during the time where, you know, with Avengers 2 was coming out the next year, I believe, they announced, oh, Quicksilver's gonna be in our movie, played by Aaron Taylor Johnson, who was also in Kick-Ass with Evan Peters.
Yeah.
Who plays Quicksilver in the this version of the X-Men. And, I mean, I love that scene especially, that, I mean, it's great seeing the old cast there, too, at the beginning and at the end, mm-hmm. because I miss them. You know, I still miss them, if I'm being honest. And, you know, like, that scene where James McAvoy and Patrick Stewart are together, you know, seeing each other in their age, that's just exciting to see. Just seeing that kind of element there, seeing how they restored the timeline. There was a lot of great sequences. You know, Peter Dinklage was a solid enough villain as Trask, you know. Mm-hmm. It's always fun seeing Peter Dinklage in anything, obviously, but like I enjoyed Days of Future Past quite a bit. I thought it really set things up and recalibrated the timeline in a way that brought the series back. Okay, look, we're back. We're a prominent series again. Keep watching us. So I enjoyed it for that.
I think they were already interested after The First Class.
Yeah.
So when Days of Future Past, everybody was more interested of watching the old cast and the new cast kind of worked it out.
Kind of find a way.
And see where they took this, because this is something that happened also in the comics and in the cartoons.
Yeah, it's somewhat based on that comic line.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And also based on the cartoon arc where they had the whole going back in time.
I was excited to see Bishop come up, you know.
Yeah, Bishop, fun. Even though it was like, One scene.
I wanted more. You could always use more Bishop, which I hope they do more in the future of this.
Yeah, there was a lot of some characters that couldn't be used, and some characters that just didn't.
It was also nice seeing. Well. It was also nice seeing Kitty Pryde come.
Yeah,
in.
I felt like Rogue, you know, wasn't there.
Those the Rogue cut.
The Rogue,
there was a version where Rogue was in it. You know, like it was an extended version that added like 10 minutes to the film, but I guess they cut her because they felt like she didn't really add that much, honestly. From what I heard, I didn't see the road cut, but there's that. And then before we get into Apocalypse, right beforehand, a certain R-rated comic book film that took the world by storm came out called Deadpool, which I remembered when that leaked test footage came out with Ryan Reynolds.
It wasn't even test footage. It was just him trying to gather momentum for
film. Leaked, and it's kind of a given that Ryan Reynolds leaked it himself because. Yeah. It really was a pitch-perfect kind of way of sending people, hey, look, a Deadpool movie could be great, and if we get it greenlit, we can make it a big hit.
I think it was right around the time where a lot of people were doing the whole GoFundMe for my movie kind of thing.
Yeah, something along those lines.
But he didn't want to do that. He just really wanted to ask, producers.
And I remembered when I first heard that Fox finally announced, yes, we are going to get a Deadpool movie made. I was going to a history class during my first year at college, and I opened my laptop up, and all of a sudden it says Deadpool confirmed 2016, and I freaked out because I'm a big Deadpool fan, and I was so excited. And I remember that April Fool's joke where they said it's going to be PG-13, and then you had Mario Lopez interviewing Ryan Reynolds, and then he said, oh, it's going to still be PG-13, right? And then Deadpool comes in, kills Mario Lopez, saying, no, it's going to be rated R. That got me excited, and then the movie came out, and I loved it.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't realize it was... They always thought it was a PG-13 movie, then realized it was rated R, so they took their kids to it.
Oh, yeah.
And it was kind of weird. Like, I saw a lot of people saying, like, oh, my God, don't take your kids to this movie. I'm like,
you shouldn't, because there's just so much inappropriate humor. There's sexual content.
No, it's just like you should know not to take your kids to that movie. I mean,
now, even if you see a trailer and like, oh, the Colossus is in here, you know, it's like it's an X-Men movie. I mean, sure, it's technically an X-Men movie, but is it really?
Not really?
Is it really? You see the mansion.
It was a good
entertaining
film.
It was a nice romp of the superhero genre.
Yeah, it was a kind of break between.
And then after that, just a few months later, Apocalypse came out, which I don't hate Apocalypse like a lot of people do.
See, I'm the kind of person that Actually, I loved Apocalypse.
You loved Apocalypse?
Yes. Really? I'm like contrary to everybody else. I just saw it this morning too.
Oh, really?
I saw half of it. It was on TV, so now I was clicking by it and I just like left it on.
I think with Apocalypse, for me, I think there are moments in that film that I think showcase some heights in this version of the series. Obviously, the main cast, especially those two leads I brought up, McAvoy and Fassbender, they're always great. And when Fassbender loses his family, that he kind of got, like, you know, that's an emotional scene to me. And I like some of the newer, younger versions of the cast. I love Cody Smit-McPhee, who plays the younger version of Nightcrawler. I think he's fantastic. Ty Sheridan, I thought, was okay as the younger version of Scott. Sophie Turner, she's fine as Jean, younger version of Jean.
Yeah, I still can't get her my head around her being not being Sansa. I honestly always, every time, I just want to hear her accent, and when I don't, I realize that she can pull off a really good American accent.
I think she's great in Game of Thrones, and we're gonna get to in Dark Phoenix, which I'll get into more about Sophie Turner. But I felt, at least in Apocalypse, she just wasn't that interesting to me. I mean, they hinted at her Dark Phoenix powers in one sequence, you know.
Yeah, almost at the end.
Towards the end. You know, but like, I think a lot of people, they introduced other mutants in there. Psylocke's in there. Olivia Munn as Psylocke, who I thought was pretty good.
Yeah, and, it was a good cast.
You know, Alexander Shipp as the young version of Storm. You know, we see, again, like, this is the 80s, and we see the mutants in that era, which is funny, seeing how McAvoy and Stewart.
Jubilee was there.
Yeah, Jubilee for a minute. Was she really there? Like, she wasn't really there.
There was, I mean, they went to the movie, so.
Yeah, they went to go see Empire, Return of the Jedi.
Return of the Jedi.
They're going to see Return of the Jedi, and it's ironic that, I almost said Sansa. Jean says, well, we all know that the third movie is usually not the best one, which is ironic given that it was the third of this version of the story. Because we see, this is the third movie that features McAvoy, Fassbender, and Jennifer Lawrence.
Well, I feel like it was, but it wasn't at the same time. Because I feel like they were going, like...
Well, Days of Future Past is also kind of that whole timeline, too.
That whole timeline.
You know, but
I feel like they were going, like...
Which is like another issue to me with the franchise. Because I always want... After Days of Future Past, I mean, I know they said Apocalypse was coming with the younger cast, but... You reset the timeline back to what it was supposed to be, and I wanted that old cast back. I wanted to go to another film with that cast currently.
No, and see, that's where, like, a lot of people differ. Like, to me, I felt like this new cast, it was their time.
Yeah.
It was, like the old cast time, like, their time passed. So now that they have a younger, newer cast, just go ahead and use them.
And the only one that will still kind of be there is Hugh Jackman. You know, because of the whole
kind of he came out when they
let
him out.
His scene was one of the better scenes in that movie.
Yeah,
you know, when he came in and all. But I think my biggest disappointment with Apocalypse was Apocalypse himself. Oscar Isaac, who is one of my favorite actors right now, that's probably the only film where I don't like him. Honestly,
I don't feel that way. I feel like he did a good job.
Really?
I feel like he was a strong character. I feel like he was left out. Like.
What did you feel about the makeup, by the way? Did you agree with the whole Ivan Ooze or Power Rangers kind of thing?
I felt it was kind of like...
Yeah, the makeup was always iffy to me.
Not as great as it could have been. I felt like it could have been better.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like that actually let go or was determined to the actual movie and what came out of it.
Interesting you say that. Because, that's the thing with Apocalypse. Like, I didn't hate it like a lot of other people did. I just felt very underwhelmed in a lot of ways. There were elements in there that I thought were actually pretty great. But I think script, direction wasn't on point like it was in Days of Future Past. And because Apocalypse was basically the biggest X-Men villain, really, in a lot of ways. Or one of the biggest X-Men villains. And he's very iconic in the stories that he's in, the Age of Apocalypse comic storyline. Very important, very iconic. And I just, like I said, it was really weird seeing Oscar Isaac in a performance that I didn't like.
I felt like they did justice to the whole Apocalypse line. Mm. Well, see, my train of thought right now, like on all these movies, the newer versions of the X-Men movies, especially Apocalypse and the Dark Phoenix one, it's all going to the not necessarily the comic books. Yeah, the comic books, they take away from it.
Yeah.
But actually the cartoon.
Right.
Because the cartoon was so iconic in bringing those characters to light.
Yeah.
I feel like they were going more
in a lot
into
of
that.
Ways. And a lot those... of people see the cartoon as the definitive take on the X-Men.
Yeah, because the Apocalypse arc on the cartoons was just so huge, mm-hmm. along with the Dark Phoenix one. Those were the two main that anybody in that watched those cartoons remembers
or read the comics. Yeah, so that's the thing with Age of Apocalypse or X-Men Apocalypse, which leads to two more X-Men movies or standalone stories. First, we get Logan, which was an R-rated film, thanks partially to the success of Deadpool. But I think James Mangold, the director who also directed The Wolverine, wanted to make an R-rated film.
Yeah.
It was Hugh Jackman's last hurrah, and what a great last hurrah it was for him to go off. You know, yeah. Based someone on the Old Man Logan storyline. You know, it's really just it's kind of an Elseworlds story in a lot of ways.
It was
too.
A newer story because I don't remember. From older comic books. It was a newer comic
it's
book.
It's somewhat. It's loosely based on the Old Man Logan storyline.
Yeah, the old man
from Mark Miller.
So it's it was definitely different, and it was a good. It was
more of a Western.
Yeah, kind of a Western style.
Yeah,
but I felt it was a good ending to his
story. It was very emotional. It was actually nominated for best adapted screenplay at the Oscars, which is one of the rare occasions a comic book movie was nominated in a major category like that. I mean, Hugh Jackman, I'd say, gives the best performance he's given as Wolverine in that film, because it was really all his movie, along with Patrick Stewart as Professor X,
who
has showing kind of like somewhat signs of dementia. He's almost like a weapon of mass destruction in that film. And their dynamic is just so heartfelt. You feel the emotion there. Also, X-23, played by Daphne Keene, comes in. She's awesome and all. And then...
That was a good...
And that final moment where... that final scene makes me cry. Like, I remember it, like...
Where he's just dying and...
Yeah, and then he goes, so that's what it feels like. Yeah. When... And you're either wondering, is he saying, this is how it feels like to die? Or is this what it feels like to have somebody who's your own? Because she's basically his daughter in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
In some ways. And, when she turns that cross into an X, kind of akin to like what you see in the comics, I was like, oh my goodness, you got me. You got me. And so I loved Logan. And then before we get into...
So Logan, just talk a little bit about it.
Yeah.
I honestly felt like it was overrated when I watched
Not really.
It. No, well, let me tell you why.
Yeah.
So I felt like it was a great movie.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But I felt like there was so much hype of just watching him, like, oh, he's gonna die.
Or it's an R-rated movie.
And it's an R-rated movie, and everybody was, like, so into it, and I'm like, all right, just watch the, like, let's get the story, let's see what the story is. And then it was a good story.
Simple.
And I don't feel like it was that great.
I get
but
that.
It was good.
I could see.
I feel like there was a lot more fans that were like, oh my god, this is so awesome. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons.
Yeah, it's more of like the hype that built up to
it. There was so much more build up.
I saw it
immediately. Overhyped.
I saw it like the moment it came out. And,
I mean, don't get me wrong. Yeah. I love this movie.
Yeah, sure. But, it's probably, honestly, it's still my favorite of all these movies, because it was like that whole history you have with Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. The fact that it's a simple, like, man on the run Western, full on Western, really. And, the emotional, for me, it's the emotional impact. It's the way that it doesn't feel like any modern superhero movie. It's very unique in its mm-hmm. structure. And James Mangold directed the hell out of it. Like, I love that film still. I have it on 4K, and they have, like, the noir cut, which is in black and white. And I like the black and white cut, too, because it just kind of adds, like, a timeless aspect to it. Mm-hmm. And I do think the R rating actually helps it more, because you see the grisly nature. Because we always see Wolverine using his claws on people, but we see very little blood or gore. And here we finally see the nature of the violence that he could bring upon people.
Yeah.
And it's not just cool to see, but it's brutal. Like, right from the opening scene alone, where he stabs a guy in the face, and you see it go through him, and then the blood, it's brutal, it's painful. And
it was what a Wolverine movie should be.
Yeah.
Like, from the beginning, from the X-Men's origins Wolverine.
Yeah.
It should have been like that.
Yeah.
But because they want to sell toys, they can't really
go
into an R-rated movie.
It's rare you get a trilogy, it's a trilogy, really, those Wolverine movies, where the third movie, each movie gets better.
Yeah.
Well, you start off horribly, then you end up pretty good, and then you end, at least in my opinion, at the best
the
you can.
Best one. Yeah,
you know,
that's
so
true.
There's that. And then there's Deadpool 2, which a lot of people were mixed on. I actually like Deadpool 2.
I didn't
mind
it. I didn't think it was as I don't think it was as great or as good as the first Deadpool, but it was enjoyable.
It's the same thing that it's like when you get introduced to something fresh for the first time, a sequel to it, depending on how you feel about it, you go like, this is fun, but it's not the same as like when I met you for the first time. You know what I mean? You know, yeah. I mean, I like Domino, I like Cable. It's fun seeing Josh Brolin in another Marvel role after Thanos.
Yeah, I felt like that was a great casting.
Yeah, those two.
That was a great character for him too.
But yeah, like I enjoyed Deadpool too. I'm looking forward to the future of Deadpool because
I like that Brad Pitt made a cameo
just for like literally 3 seconds.
No, not even 3 seconds, like half a millisecond or something like that.
Yeah.
When he just like kind of dies.
Yeah, that's hilarious. But like Deadpool, he's at least Ryan Reynolds is gonna be the only actor that's gonna keep that role now that we're with the acquisition of Fox. Which we'll get into. Now we're going to talk about Dark Phoenix itself. Ooh, that was an interesting discussion. That was a lot of X-Men movies really leading up to this.
But, I mean, you also brought in the Wolverine and the Deadpool ones.
So. Yeah, well, they're part of the franchise. And it's integral to bring those up because when you think about it, the X-Men franchise has had an interesting history in terms of quality. It's always been a roller coaster. You know, where there's times where it was great, times where it was good, times where it was trash. And times where it would just kind of go back up and down. Which leads us to what a lot of people are saying is technically the last hurrah of the franchise. Although, actually, we still have New Mutants supposedly still coming out. But that movie was supposed to come out last year in April. And then they delayed it. And then they delayed it again. And now it's coming out in 2020.
I feel like they just delayed it just so that the whole acquisition had to take place.
There's that rumor. There's the...
I feel like... Yeah, because in reality... if they would have made it now, then they would have to change it all over again.
Yeah,
because they were going to bring in more people.
Who knows?
Marvel was going to get in on it.
Who knows?
Marvel's going to get in on it as soon as this thing's done. They're going to get in on
who knows what's going to happen with that movie. But so we're going to talk about Dark Phoenix. We're going to start off with a spoiler-free discussion on the film. And then I'm going to give you a warning in which we're going to go a little more spoiler-filled with our thoughts on the film. So first off, I'm just going to say about Dark Phoenix. I was a bit nervous going into the film because I haven't heard the best things about it. Yeah. I was really
23% on Rotten Tomatoes by critics, by the way.
Yeah, it's interesting that it was in that low. Simon Kinberg, this was his first feature film debut. He directed an episode of the new version of The Twilight Zone recently with Jordan Peele, which I haven't seen, but
it's actually pretty good.
Oh, nice, nice. So but yeah, he's directing a. This is his first feature film. He's been a prominent writer on a lot of these X-Men films, and you know, the Dark Phoenix saga is being retold basically with this younger cast. To sum up my spoiler-free thoughts on Dark Phoenix, I gotta admit, I didn't like it. I was pretty underwhelmed by it, even with the lower expectations I had. I don't think it's as bad as some people might say based on
the... It's not 22%.
22%, that's a little too harsh. Like, I'd say if it was in the 50s, it would make more sense. But, like, I still felt the movie was, honest to God, like, the way I would describe it, I feel like it's pointless. For one, you're trying to retell the saga again. Yeah, 22%, by the way, it's a 22% critics rating, 65% audience rating on Rotten Tomatoes. But then again, Rotten Tomatoes is an aggregate. So, like, those 22% of critics that gave it that review, a lot of them probably just gave it a mediocre review, but counted that as rotten. So that's why it's like that. But I felt that the movie was very pointless. Simon Kinberg, you could tell that this was his first movie directing it. He didn't do a disastrous job, but you could tell... Like, he is still learning how to direct properly or to structure a film in a way. It was very rushed to me, the way the film was put together. Like, it goes from one thing to the other really quickly in certain arcs that I feel should have taken another one or two movies to flesh out. I thought Sophie Turner actually did a better job in this film than she did in the previous film.
Yeah.
She sells the emotion very well.
I feel like she's growing as an actress.
She
really
is, definitely. Definitely. And I liked her in the film. I kind of wish they did more with her dynamic with Scott, because we kind of get hints at their relationship a little bit, you know, but we don't really see that much chemistry there, honestly. McAvoy and Stewart are always great, even if they're not given the best material. They sell even the dumbest dialogue great. And, in regards to whatever things I thought about the movie, like, it just felt very basic, let's go to point A to point B so we can kind of get some of the points of the Dark Phoenix saga in here in one film. Unfortunately, this is their last hurrah with this cast. And terrible,
their
villain.
Their last hurrah. Yeah.
And I felt it went off on a whimper. And Jessica Chastain as the villain, bad. Like, they give her nothing. They give her absolutely nothing to work with. The threat in this movie is just a boring threat with little to no conflict in there. And besides maybe one interesting train sequence that I actually found kind of cool, for me, the movie really...
Towards the end?
Yeah, towards the end, there's this train sequence, which, by the way, was added as a reshoot. Thank God, because the rest of the movie, there's a lot less action, which isn't... My problem isn't that there's less action. It's just that for the Dark Phoenix saga, the scale that this movie takes is much smaller than I expected, or what I think should be for the scope of the Dark Phoenix story. So, like, give your thoughts, Jorge.
My thoughts on the whole thing, I liked it. I liked it. I thought it was a good movie. I didn't think it was great.
Right.
I thought it was a good movie. Yes, it was lacking in some parts, especially the villain part. I felt like it was kind of rushed, but I also felt like they kind of just wanted to end the whole saga there.
Yeah.
But it had good action. The story was decent enough that you could actually sit down in there and watch.
I appreciate that the movie didn't go over 2 hours, because a lot of superhero movies these days feel like they have to be at least two hours.
Long as hell
or longer.
And I felt like it was very similar to...
Last Stand?
No. It was very similar in some ways to the very first... X-Men movie.
Really?
Yes. The whole, this girl has superpowers that she can't
control. Rogue, right?
The whole way, like, we have to get this team
together to help her out.
And the way it ended.
So would you say it's kind of like a full circle thing almost?
I felt like it was kind of like that.
Even if this one, which titularly is called Dark Phoenix, it doesn't even have X-Men in the title. It kind of goes back to the first film with like Rogue, because Rogue was at the center of that film along with Wolverine trying to help her find her purpose or something.
I felt like it was...
Without giving too many details, obviously, before we get into the spoilers.
Yeah. It was a good attempt, and in a way, it kind of worked. But I mean, it wasn't what people expected, and it's kind of sad that this, because I feel like Captain Marvel kind of hijacked the whole scene, because that last scene was added because it was supposed to be a battle in space.
That battle
in space seems so similar to Captain Marvel's.
Oh, it would have been similar to Captain Marvel,
and a lot of the things, like, because the green guys, I can't remember their name from Captain Marvel,
the Skrulls,
the Skrulls were actually the name of the guys that were
similar and all
yes,
those
so,
things, right?
Yes, so that's the reason why I think a lot of the stuff got changed at the end, and it became kind of like, damn, they kind of took a lot of our stuff that we were going to use for
this. They were doing reshoots for this movie as early as earlier this year in January.
Yeah, especially because of Captain Marvel.
Because they must have heard, you know, the Disney deal was still pending. You know, that could be an element of it.
And it wasn't even that. It was because Captain Marvel...
came out in
the
March,
story. Yeah. The story was so kind of similar, not exactly
the sci-fi element of it with space and everything.
Yeah, the whole space thing. And,
which, by the way, they were teasing this movie or hyping this movie up as like the space element of the film, because of how Dark Phoenix comes about. You know, like how some of the mutants, they go to space in a really rushed sequence, I'd say. You know, like, it's there, like, within the first 15 minutes, setting it up. Like, that's one of my biggest things.
Yeah.
This whole movie is just very rushed in a way that, given the nature of this story, it shouldn't have been rushed.
It felt kind
of
like Game of Thrones.
Sophie Turner, that's the sad thing.
Sophie
Turner has been involved in two franchises recently that have been very rushed in their story dynamics.
But see, even though it was rushed, I still kind of felt... It was a good story. I felt like, you know, the acting was good enough that they carry the story.
Like, the acting is always good, except for Jennifer, who literally felt like she just phoning it in.
But then, you know what happened to her. I mean, we'll talk about it in a little bit. But
which is funny because they show it in the trailer. Or in one of the trailers. We'll not say what happens, but they show something what happens to Raven in the second trailer, at least. Which you might not have seen, but...
Yeah, I probably.
But we'll get into that in the spoiler discussion.
Overall, I felt that I didn't think it was great, but okay. I think it was good enough.
Yeah.
I would give it a 7.5.
Yeah, like here's the thing with Dark Phoenix. It's not a disaster like people feared or some might think if they see the Rotten Tomatoes score, which honestly, I think the Rotten Tomatoes has a little too strong of an effect when
the audience score is 65.
Yeah, so, and also, did you see the box office numbers on Dark Phoenix?
No, not yet.
Like $33 million.
Is that it?
Yeah, for this opening weekend for an X-Men film.
But I feel like, well, they're still today, so...
Yeah, but it's like 30, not even breaking 40 million, which would also be pretty underwhelming. That just goes to show whether it was the marketing or just the lack of hype. Or that there's so many damn movies out there nowadays. It's like...
It's true. There's a lot of things to watch.
But that's the sad thing, because X-Men used to be one of the biggest franchises, you know. But I think it's because people have already kind of thought, okay, they're ending it already. And the marketing wasn't
the best. I mean, if you don't really pay attention to the whole, like... If you don't follow the how they're going to end it, you're just thinking, oh, it's another X-Men movie.
Sure. And it doesn't look... And to be fair, the trailers and TV spots weren't... I wouldn't say terrible, but it was like, I don't feel the itch to go see it.
And it wasn't as promoted as other X-Men movies.
Yeah, and when
there wasn't no promotions in Cross Jr.
And they delayed the movie twice or so. Like, they delayed the movie twice. It was supposed to come out in November a few months ago. But then they said, oh, February, and when they had that first trailer come out. And then the next day, they delayed it to June 7th, and it just kind of, a lot of people lost confidence in it. Yeah, they had to do reshoots, take care of a lot of things. Simon Kinberg, you know, obviously first-time director, elements of there. And overall, the thing with Dark Phoenix is that it's not a terrible movie, per se. I didn't like the movie overall. It was pretty, like, man, this is kind of pointless and everything else. But I think the dogpiling, here's my issue. Like,
no, but the way I feel about it is, like, a lot of people expected so much, like, oh, it's just gonna be in, it's gotta be epic. But I feel like those are the people that haven't followed it throughout the whole time. And yes, it should have been epic, but at the same time, it's like,
that's the thing, it really should have been. That's how I feel.
It should have been epic, but at the same time, I'm feeling like, okay, so they're gonna keep going with the X-Men franchise, they're just going a different route. They're not really, this isn't over, this isn't the end,
We'll get into the future of the X-Men franchise after the spoiler discussion. Mm-hmm. So, but to wrap up spoiler-free thoughts, I didn't like the movie. I felt, like, once again, pointless. It really repeated a lot of the same mistakes that Last Stand did when telling the Dark Phoenix saga, and wished that it was rushed and really didn't feel earned. Terrible villain, weak. Like, if you could call it a villain, honestly. Like, Jessica Chastain, like, her villain here is almost on par in terms of pointlessness and weakness to, like, Steppenwolf in Justice League, where it's like, why you're just here because you need to say some platitudes and say some threats to the characters.
You know, I honestly believe that there was a better part for it, and they had to change so much of it.
You got Jessica Chastain, one of the best actresses
out
there.
And I feel like there was so much more better of it, and I mean, she played a decent role.
Like, she wasn't terrible, but she was there for a paycheck. Yeah, like, that's what it felt like to me. Like, they didn't give her anything to do except to say platitudes and have her group of her henchmen to help out, try to lure Jean into her side or whatever.
Yeah.
But
I feel like I said, you know, I feel like this, that was just the reshoots and the rewriting of the whole, because her, it was so, like, this is what explained to me in the internet when I was reading up last night.
Yeah, right.
So the whole thing was like, they were going one way, and it was so similar to Captain Marvel that they were like, we need to change this, because this is going to look like we're just copying
them. That is possible. That is possible.
And I really, honestly, I feel like this movie was at par with Captain Marvel. I know that a lot of people loved it or whatever, but I feel like
I was on the train. I wasn't a big fan of Captain Marvel. Like, I didn't hate it. I thought it was... Yeah. Perfectly average film
I think this was an average film, victim to
unfair hype on, like, a lot of toxic dudes online. But the thing with this movie, though, is that why I'd say it's not, why I prefer Captain Marvel over this is because Captain Marvel, like, it had different kinds of goals, and there wasn't as much of a history built up to it, whereas the X-Men franchise, 19 years. This is 19 years in everything else. And although we technically still have one more film left in this version of the Fox universe, I really should. It dropped the ball. It was pointless.
See, that's the reason why I feel like a lot of people are missing the point. I don't feel like you should go back 19 years for it. I feel like you should watch this film within the last three films of the, you know, since X-Men. X-Men First Class.
Yeah.
You know, since X-Men First Class.
2011.
So you just watch it since then, and because a lot of people are just bringing it, you know, way back.
Yeah.
And feeling like, oh, this is gonna end everything since 2000.
Sure.
And in reality, it's kind of just ending, because I feel like the 2000 saga ended with Days of Future Past.
Sure.
I think that was the end of it.
Okay.
And then the X-Men First Class ends now. Like, okay, this whole 10 years, you know, decade okay long kind of thing.
Okay, so that was our spoiler-free thoughts on Dark Phoenix. Now, we're going to move on to a spoiler discussion on the film. So if you have not seen the film, please tune out. But if you have seen the film or you don't care about spoilers, please continue on as we discuss some elements of the plot. So I guess the first big thing, which I guess is kind of a spoiler, but I said one of the trailers revealed it, actually. One of the reasons why Jean is so scary to the rest of the team now is that she ends up inadvertently killing Raven.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll say this much. Like, the sequence itself, I talked a lot of crap on Jennifer in a lot of these films, but I'd say she does a little bit better when she in her sequence where she's dying, where she's telling Beast.
It's more dramatic.
Yeah, where she's telling Beast, she's about to tell him "I love you," basically.
Yeah,
you know, but that doesn't happen. And she
but
dies.
But I don't feel like she was saying "I love you" as in like
romantically.
Romantically, as she was still saying.
It was always
like
an attraction.
I love
there
you as in like we're, you know, we've been so long together.
Yeah, like since the 60s, which is funny how none of them aged.
None of them aged. Yeah.
None of them aged.
They should have been in their 50s.
This takes
and 60s.
Place in the this movie takes place in the 90s.
1992. You know what? It was a nod to the cartoons, 1992, because
right
that's when the cartoons actually
yeah
started.
Yeah, but it's funny because this movie takes place in the 90s. The first X-Men came out in 2000, and are you telling me James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender in less than 10 years are going to look like?
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah,
you can't go back. You can't go back to the 2000s. You got to start it from X-Men.
Look, like,
First Class.
The X-Men franchise gave up on the whole idea of continuity after Days of Future Past, because even though they reset quote in quotes the timeline, they went back to like the newer cast, the younger cast with the Apocalypse story, and now the Dark Phoenix story, basically trying to tell it their version of it with the younger cast. But so there's that element that I have issues with. Usually I didn't care about the continuity issues. I think in some ways, if you try to subscribe to continuity exclusively like the MCU does, you kind of limit creative ideas of the story. But even with that in mind, I guess for some reason this time it bothered me a little bit, you know. And so there's that. We brought up how the way they bring Jessica Chastain up as the villain, it was the most rushed thing ever, because you see
yeah
her in that dinner party or whatever, and then all of a sudden she goes out, her dog's out there,
yeah,
or whatever.
And she's killing people.
Just instantly.
Instantly.
We know nothing about her
yeah
character.
Yeah, like, who this guy's and why are
we
they
literally
here,
know
like
nothing. Like that. Like,
I mean, the guy kind of gets explained later on, but at the same time, it's like, oh okay.
That's
are
being generous, though. Like, I honestly think that's being generous, because they, like, like I said, like, Jessica Chastain's here for a paycheck, and she's not terrible, but she's like doing nothing. They do explain
like, oh, we're here because our planet got destroyed because
right
of this force, and we
sure
need the force to bring it back and
yeah
create new things here, so we kind of destroy this place and make it our own.
Right.
That's kind of how they like you
right
know explained it. But at the same time, it's like develop it. If you develop it a little bit more, it would have been so much greater.
Yeah, like
it would have been
my
so
issue
much greater.
There are elements in the movie that I think
were great. Like, they had a good,
I wouldn't say great, but like you
they
have something here.
They had a good concept, right?
They had a good concept.
They had a good concept, and if you develop it, it's going to be
another movie or so. We're setting it up, because you see hints of like some of the mutants are kind of
if
like
this
fed up
been
with
two
Xavier
movies. It would have been, I feel like it would have been so much better.
Yeah, if it ended,
just a
how about it ended
two
with her turning into Dark Phoenix? Even like you set up their conflict of
Charles getting a big head and the
yeah
whole
getting big headed with
like
it all.
The first and a half act of the movie.
Yeah.
If you set that up in one movie, hour and a half, you know.
Sure. So there's that element of it, like that conflict within the team that I found kind of interesting overall.
Yeah.
But then once she turns into Dark Phoenix and then everything, you know, shit hits the fan, I feel like it just kind of becomes very, it's like it's the movie Sleepwalking in a lot of ways, where it says, okay, we need to get to point A to point B, let's do as much as we can.
Yeah, one of the biggest
concise amount of time.
Yeah, one of the biggest problems I saw with the movie was like, why did she go to Magneto? Like,
yeah,
like, there was no need for her to go to Magneto, yeah, if she really wanted to find
they
out.
They try, like, to set her up. They show her with her parents in the car accident in the beginning of the movie to set up like how Xavier kind of had to hide the truth about her father from her as a result, because we find out that her father was abandoned her, basically.
Yeah, because she couldn't, because
her mom was killed in the crash, and yeah, he blames her for
another,
it.
Another point that goes back to the original 2000s movie.
Yeah. You know,
like, their parents didn't want her, so they let it go.
They let her go. It's like, that's the thing with the X-Men franchise. It's kind of an allegory for a lot of social issues, obviously, and like parents who are scared to deal with certain things about their children that they don't want to acknowledge. You know, but like,
whether it's like homosexuality.
Yeah, like, you know, how many, like that, you know? Yeah, like stuff like that. But also an issue is going back to other elements of the plot itself. Like, she goes to Magneto, which is in this certain area where he and other mutants are kept in. You know, where
they're not really kept in, they're more like just living there.
They're living there. Like, the government gave them that land, to do whatever they want. You know, it was kind of a compromise on their end, you know. And when he finds out about Raven, you know, Michael Fassbender, one of my favorite actors, he sells it definitely when he finds out, because he loved Raven. You know, like him and Beast, they both loved Hank, they both love Raven.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, I think overall, I'd say the acting is the best part of this movie. Like, the actors, even for the material that I felt was rushed and lackluster, did a solid enough job. I can't praise those, like, Fassbender and McAvoy enough. Like, I really love them. I'm going to miss them as these characters, as the franchise moves on. And then we get to, like, the final battle. Let's talk about that train sequence first, which I think is my favorite scene in the movie.
Good sequence.
It was a good, I mean, it was to well be directed.
Added, to be added at the end, that's... Because you don't expect things to be added at the end, like, to actually work out as well as that did.
It was exciting. It was well done enough, and I liked what they went with action wise. But then it kind of ends back into another thing that a lot of comic book movies do in their finale. That just turns into a light show, which is very common in a lot of finales of superhero movies, where a big cliche is like, thankfully, they don't have a blue beam of light going into the sky, which almost every other superhero movie has these days. But still, it was a light show trying to get these things in. And then it ends with, you know, ends with Jean as Dark Phoenix bringing Jessica Chastain's character back up to space, explosion, and whatnot. Stringer. And the rest of the team thinks, oh, Jean's gone, and everything else. They even name the school after Jean.
Which is weird. Right.
Which adds to the continuity thing. I get the tribute part, but...
they're still called X-Men, but now they're
And then it ends. It ends kind of touching with, like, you know, Xavier and Eric together.
Another nod to the 2000s.
Yeah, the chess game. I mean, that's always been an iconic thing. I mean, Magneto and Xavier, their dynamic has always been the heart of all these movies for the most part. And then we see that little tease. Oh wait, no, Jean's still out there. Like, with, like, you see her.
Well, the Phoenix.
The Phoenix still out there. You know,
ray of.
Yeah, you see it in the sky or whatever, but it's like, okay, is this their kind of way of saying, oh, the kind of continuity, because she'll come back, but then again, Raven's dead. Because we see Raven, or Mystique in X-Men 1 and the other two movies, and it's like, how is this work canon-wise? How is Raven just dead?
I don't feel like it's...
Just abandoning?
Like I'm saying, it's
playing to the Avengers logic of how time travel doesn't change the past or the future, but rather it just goes to a separate dimension or something?
Maybe.
I guess, but then again, we're projecting there.
No, so, I feel like these are, like, I don't feel like these are, like, together with the 2000s. I feel like this is the 2000 movies.
I respect that it was trying to be its own thing.
I feel like this is more of its own thing, so I don't think it's
abandoning it. We're never seeing that. Well, we're never seeing this cast again, but we're also never seeing the old cast again, because, so that was our spoiler-free thoughts on the Dark Phoenix. We're going to get into the future of the X-Men franchise, because as many of us know, Walt Disney, Disney...
Well, I don't think it was spoiler-free, I think it was spoiled.
Yeah.
The spoil part.
Sure.
But yeah.
But like, Disney, they acquired Fox, which includes the rights also to X-Men and the Fantastic Four. So...
A bunch of other things,
but like in terms of the Marvel side of things, those are the two
Deadpool
properties.
Deadpool is also
Fox, but Ryan Reynolds is going to be the only actor that they're going to keep, because Ryan Reynolds can get away with saying, oh, hey, where is everybody?
Gambit.
When he joins. Yeah, Gambit's part of Gambit, it. Yeah. Which I don't think
Channing... Because they were trying to do the movie for a long time.
Yeah, with Channing Tatum.
And it didn't work. And now they're rematching it with somebody else, I've heard.
Do you think if Gambit joins this version of, like, Disney's universe with the Marvel universe, do you think they'll still try to get Channing?
Probably not. Probably go... I feel like Channing Tatum's time for being Gambit, it's kind of, like, past.
And I think he's over it. Like, you think he's over it? Like, he's like, I spent way too many years trying to get this done, and it's not going to happen.
Maybe. If they do have him in there, it would be... I feel like he will do a good job.
I don't think they're going to get him, but I wouldn't be surprised if they did, because Channing Tatum still doesn't have, like, a current big superhero role. You know, like, he could have been a good... Like, I could see Marvel wanting to get him, because he's been getting better as an actor.
But he's a likable character.
Likable presence. Overall. You know, he was someone who I thought would have been a good Shazam. You know, like
but I feel like they did a good job.
With Zachary Levi, I love Zachary Levi, but like, yeah. But Channing Tatum,
I feel like Channing could play a villain, actually, a Batman villain.
He could, you know? That'd be interesting. But yeah. there's
a blackface.
So there's that thing, but with a
black mask. I mean,
blackface. Sorry, don't take that wrong, guys.
Sorry,
with the future of the X-Men franchise and Fantastic Four, let's bring them up too. We're going to say goodbye to this version of the X-Men. We are saying goodbye.
I really do believe that they're going to keep the whole X-Men, except for New Mutants, the whole X-Men under wrap for some time. Maybe 4 years.
Yeah,
They're definitely going to come out with a new Fantastic Four.
I think they're going to have Fantastic Four first. That is the property that is ripe for a reboot, finally.
Yeah, that last Fantastic Four was horrible.
Oh my goodness. I was so dumb when that movie first came out. Because when that movie was being promoted, I was one of the only people on the internet that was rooting for it and saying, this is going to be good. I have hope. You know,
it looked good.
Yeah, it looked okay.
It looked okay.
But a lot of people on the internet were rooting against it because they wanted Fantastic Four to go back to Marvel Studios. Mm-hmm. Some people on the internet just didn't like the young cast. A small segment of racist idiots didn't like Michael B. Jordan in there, which those are the least of those movies' issues. That movie is just historically bad. I'd say it's even worse than those first two movies with Jessica Alba.
Chris Evans. By a lot. I feel like that 10% Rotten Tomatoes
I wouldn't say they're good movies, but they're campy and they're like,
yeah, they're what the mid 2000s was.
What you expect for that superhero genre
for that time.
You know, and yeah. Lawrence Fishburne was really good as the Silver Surfer. You know, I love what they do with the Silver Surfer in that second movie, Rise of the Silver Surfer. Like Chris Evans and Michael Chiklis as the Human Torch and the Thing. I don't think
Chris Evans could come back to do that anymore.
No, of course not. Well, if you're one of the four Captain people America. In the world that have not seen Endgame, Chris Evans is probably just done with superheroes for now. And
it's three people now.
Yeah, but
the other person saw
it. But with Fantastic Four, that's going to come up. We'll see them introduced.
Yeah, Fantastic Four will definitely come before the X-Men.
But with the X-Men, when that eventually comes in, which will happen, I'm curious to see how the MCU introduces mutants, because we already have superpowered beings. What are mutants going to bring to it? Is the nature of like different dimensions that they've introduced going to find a way to bring in the mutants to the team?
I feel like what they should do is don't come in and introduce them to us.
Okay.
We already know who they are.
Yeah.
We've been having this thing for quite some time.
Sure.
Just start it off in the middle.
Okay.
You know, these are characters most of the people knows. But do have a lot more get Gambit in there.
Yeah.
Get Rogue.
Yeah.
Jubilee, get it in there.
Do you think we're gonna get
Kitty
Wolverine?
Pryde. Yes. Have a new Wolverine
with the yellow and blue spandex and everything else.
I don't know.
Marvel Studios has done a good job like getting comic accurate.
Well,
suits.
This last movie had really good suits. You know, it was the whole.
Yeah, I'd say so.
A New Mutants kind of X, yellow X with the black thing.
I think with Kevin Feige now being able to have his hands on the mutants, I do see him trying to find a way to use that yellow and blue suit, because we haven't seen that yet, because the X-Men franchise that we've known for the last 19 years have always said, why would you want to do that? It looks goofy.
It does look goofy. It's a 90s thing.
Yeah, but I think they'll find a way to make it work in this. You know what I think they could do? They could make the X-Men movies just like Captain Marvel, like a 90s... kind of story,
mm-hmm.
You know, and then find a way to say, why weren't they here the whole time? The mutants, like they were a secret society or something like that. But then again, the mutants were public, and it's like the mutants were always an allegory for like minority issues. You know? Some people interpreted like Charles Xavier and the Magneto. The Jewish
community, you know, that got ousted, and
they that, were and also on for some people time. Compared Xavier and Magneto to like MLK and Malcolm X in some ways. You know, like
the,
that
the
element
two spectrums of the whole
civil rights
civil
movement.
Civil rights, you know?
You know. But like, I'm curious to see what the MCU does with the X-Men. I think. Like I said, the Fantastic Four is going to come first, you know? But I think with the X-Men, there's a lot of opportunity to introduce the mutants into an interesting story with the surviving members of Earth's
Mightiest
Heroes.
I feel like, Sinestro?
No, that's Green Lantern. Sinestro.
Not Sinestro.
Mr. Sinister?
Mr. Sinister, yes. Yeah. I feel like that was a good line that they could have used for one of these movies, but at the end of the day, so they could go in into that. They could do the Sentinel thing more.
Yeah, Sentinels can be explored more. You know,
there's so many ways they could go to it. It's just, you know, you gotta. I don't feel like they should start from scratch. I feel like if they start with already known characters, well cast.
Yeah.
Casting is crucial.
Yes.
You know?
Man, I'm so curious to see what they do with like Xavier and Magneto. That's going to be hard.
Yeah. It's going to be hard.
Those two casting and Wolverine's going to be hard, you know?
Well, I feel like if we give them a chance.
You think they're going to go younger with the mutants too?
I feel like they might go younger with some mutants.
Some of them, like early 20s maybe. Like Peter Parker age, but just a little older than Peter Parker, even though Tom Holland's 22 years old.
Well, just to use them a little bit longer, because by the end of the X-Men, the original, the first X-Men movies, Magneto and Charles Xavier, they were kind of older now.
Yeah. Like 60s or so.
Yeah.
Mid to late 60s by then.
Also was, who played Storm?
That was Halle Berry.
Halle Berry was also on the older side.
Even though she was starting in her 30s.
Slash,
that was when she was like in the like in her area of her career where she just got her Oscar, became the first African-American actress to win Best Lead Actress.
Well, she played a good role.
Yeah, she did. I always loved her as Storm.
And towards the end, it was kind of like, okay, she can't really play. She could still play the part, but you could still see
like I said, with the exception of Ryan Reynolds, every single character is going to be recast as we've seen.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
And so, like I said, I think
I don't know how many more Ryan Reynolds
Deadpool movies
they're gonna make. I feel like they make two more, and then
do you think they're gonna introduce him as Deadpool in his own movie in the universe, or do you think they're gonna introduce him in one of the future movies, but as a guest character or even like a fun credit scene?
No, I feel like he could make it one of. I feel like now that everything's together,
they could
make him, like, if he gets one of his movies, they could bring him in.
Hope they find a way to have him and Spider-Man together, because I always love Spider-Man. Deadpool,
yeah, that was
comics.
Pretty cool. I feel like, you
once
know,
Tom Holland reaches a certain age,
Wolverine's, you know, just
once Tom Holland's Peter Parker, once he becomes Peter Parker in like college years, they'll find a way to kind of bring them together, because that's just money in the bank.
Well, that's just not this upcoming. Spider-Man movie, but the one after that.
Yeah, the one after that. I know Sony reportedly wants the third Spider-Man movie with Tom Holland to have Tom Hardy's Venom, because even though the critics hated Venom, that movie was a big hit.
I actually like Venom.
here's the thing with Venom, by the way. Another thing beyond the X-Men. I don't know if I think if the movie's good, but I can't deny I enjoyed watching it, because it felt like a throwback to those early 2000s movies. And that movie made $800 million worldwide. That movie was a hit. Whether people like it or not.
The time it came out, it was just perfect.
It was October, you know, and
not a lot of things
it was a short movie. It was PG-13. And it was, nothing has ever been fully confirmed.
It was funny. I didn't expect it to
weirdly
be funny.
Weirdly funny in some ways. It becomes a weird CGI mess later on, but it's I'll say this much. I actually kind of enjoyed Venom in a guilty pleasure way, I'd say. With Venom, they haven't, Sony wants it to be part of the MCU, but Kevin Feige's like, nope. But then Venom became a big hit, and I think audiences actually liked it more than critics did. So do you think Kevin Feige might want to compromise with Venom and say, okay, we'll put him in. Tom Hardy could be Venom in Spider-Man 3 or whatever.
I don't know.
Or they'll find a way to the dimension thing or something.
That they're teasing. Sony's not part of the whole deal with the Fox.
They put Spider-Man on lease, basically, with him.
So that's the reason why it might not happen. They might use a different Venom.
Yeah.
They might.
If they do,
because
but
Venom's
then,
so iconic, they might even do. They might even overpass Venom and go with Carnage.
Yeah, and, they teased Carnage though in that Venom movie with Venom. Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
Oh man, but like that was a tangent on Venom Beyond the Mutants. So overall, like, I think you and I are both pretty curious to see what Marvel does with the future of the mutants.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, to wrap this podcast up, I'm still a little bummed with how the franchise kind of goes off, at least with this cast, on a whimper, at least in my eyes. I felt like they went off on a whimper.
I feel like you need to separate the 2000 movies. Like I said, I'm not, like, if you separate them, look,
I am separating that.
Okay.
You might be
a little bit more like...
Let me be clear. I am separating the 2000s part because I accepted the fact that this is the newer cast. I accepted that after Days of Future Past, that that's what they're trying to go for. But my issue is that even with this new cast overall, with this story, Dark Phoenix Saga deserves... longer form storytelling there, and if they were going to end it overall, maybe do a different story. Maybe do your original own story with this young cast and find a more satisfying conclusion to this arc. But then again, this was maybe they were developing it right before the Fox deal was in negotiations, because the Fox deal cleared earlier this year. You know, they can't legally do things around it then because the deal wasn't closed yet. Mm. But they closed this year and everything else. I just wish they did more with the story because the X-Men deserve better. I've always been a fan of this franchise ever since that first film. I've been a fan of the First Class era. I just wish they did more.
Yeah, so. Same here. I feel like when I first heard of it and I thought it was, I was excited to see it. Then I saw the 22% Rotten Tomatoes and I heard a lot of stuff about it. And I was like, man, I'm going to be so disappointed with this movie. I went to see it.
Yeah.
You know,
you and
I
went to see it together.
We were there. And when I came out of it, I was like, you know what? This wasn't that bad of a movie. It wasn't great.
Yeah.
It was good enough. It did leave some open stuff that I wish that would have been addressed, but other than that, it's like, okay, I could see this, the way this ended being all right.
Okay, like, you know? So those were two somewhat different takes on Dark Phoenix. I wasn't a big fan. Jorge seemed to enjoy it, but I'm just gonna say thank you again, Jorge, for joining me again. The first time I had a guest come on for a second time. It's fitting that Sophie Turner is connecting both. So that's kind of funny. Before we send ourselves off, do you have anything you wanted to plug? Instagram, social media?
Oh yeah, just follow me on Instagram. It's jrod2763 or jrodcollegian. You know. And that's my Twitter, J Rock Collegian. But later on this summer, I'll come out with my The Loudest Bark.
Yeah, sports podcast.
I'm still working on it. It'll probably be late summer, right. You know, because summer is about to start. But it'll probably be late summer right before we head into school. But yeah. Go back to school.
Just for fun, quick thoughts on the NBA Finals. Just for fun.
It's gonna be really tough for the Kevin Durant's gotta come back. If Kevin Durant doesn't come back,
then it's a wrap.
Yeah, it's a wrap.
It's kind of funny that the Warriors lost both their home games.
Well, the Warriors, I feel like they put in so much in the third game of the series, and they lost it. That they were like
the momentum's gone.
They just couldn't. Kawhi Leonard's a beast.
Yeah, well, he's a beast.
He's on another level now.
If they win and it looks like the Raptors are gonna win, he's getting MVP.
He's the MVP.
There's no doubt about it.
If Kawhi Leonard wasn't there, they would never have gone as far as they have right now.
So that's as close as you're gonna get to more sports talk on this movie and TV podcast, though. But it's NBA season, final season. So
if the run comes back, that's a whole different game.
We'll see what happens there. But there is Jorge. Follow him.
Thank
on social media.
Me.
I am Noah Villaverde, host of the Blank Green Canvas podcast. And join me again next week when I am joined by a friend of mine where we're going to be discussing Men in Black International and the Men in Black franchise as well. So thank you for joining me, and I'll be back with you again next week.